Welcome back to another episode of Soundscapes, the podcast. This is the companion podcast to the Soundscapes radio show that airs on Radio St. Pete every Monday night from 10 to 11 p.m. My name is Domenico Pontoriero, and with me today is David Eichenberger. Hello, David.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic.
I'm so happy to have you back because David joined me as a co-host on one of my very early episodes, and now I've added the podcast to this repertoire, and I think this is great because I had such great conversation with Dave, so it's wonderful to have you back. Dave, tell us a little bit about your work, your music, what it sounds like, and what inspires you.
Well, this is the thing. I've been a guitar player for most of my life, and my music is, I would describe it as ambient. Certainly guitar-based, because that's my instrument that I play. But I grew up listening to lots of different kinds of music, from blues and jazz to classic rock and stuff like that, becoming an actual guitar player. And then, you know, I also was interested in technology as a kid. And I have, like, this math and science brain, so I would always listen to sounds. And it could be incidental sounds in a movie. It could be, you know, some very abstract classical music. And I would wonder how to achieve those sounds with the very limited musical knowledge I had at the time and the very limited equipment that I had at the time. So I would probably connect things together that they weren't supposed to be together that way. And I would try to make a bunch of noise on my guitar and record it. And some of it I thought was actually pretty cool and that I would want to listen to it later. And then I realized maybe some other people want to do that. And so that is essentially how I started my recording career.
It kind of sounds like the sort of perfect setup for an ambient composer, because I feel like it requires experimentation.
It does,
and knowledge of lots of different genres, right? And technology.
Well, the weird thing about it was that at the time, being like an 11-year-old kid, I was not aware that there was a thing called ambient music.
Oh, of course.
Like, I had no, I was not exposed to that.
It's not something that they play at the prom or, you know, the dance.
Well, you know, I mean, at that point, this was, you know, pre-MTV and pre-really FM radio. So, you know, pop AM radio certainly wasn't playing anything like this. And I didn't have any, I had older siblings, but they were not listening to obscure music forms. They were listening to whatever was popular in the day. And I just had this idea that, like, you know, oh, I like the way, you know, my guitar sounds if I do this, or I set the amp up this way, which, you know, sometimes you're not supposed to do. And I, you know, would hook up my reel-to-reel recorders in strange ways and get weird feedback sounds and echoes. And I thought that that was fantastic, not realizing that people had done that for years beforehand. But, like, you know, this is pre-internet too, so there was no way to research this stuff. I just thought it was a really cool sound if you hook up the output back into the input and you get feedback. You know, and I could play one note on my guitar and it would start to get louder and louder and distort. And then while that's playing, I could play stuff right over top of that.
Right. Yeah, I think that's really fascinating. Tell us a little about the artists that inspire you or other music that you're into. You had mentioned Brian Eno.
He's sure.
Like he's a monument of ambient music and that sort of minimalist sort of genre.
Yeah, he was a pioneer. You know, he came from a band called Roxy Music, and he was a pioneer in the late 70s. And he, you know, took some of the ideas from Philip Glass and Terry Riley and decided that, you know, he was not an instrumentalist, but he did have a very creative mind. And he, you know, I found out later that he used to do the same thing as far as, like, take equipment and hook it up in a way that wasn't designed to be done. And, he, you know, I remember as a kid, one of the things was I had a flea market by my house, and they had a used record shop inside this flea market. And I remember seeing Brian Eno's ambient albums. He had four of them, Ambient 1, 2, 3, and 4. And they had similar covers. They had sort of like these weird topographic maps on them and in a similar color palette. And I'd heard his name before, but honestly, I bought the albums, the actual vinyl, because I liked the way the album looked. And I thought that was kind of cool. And I read on the back a little bit about how he designed the way to make the music on the album. And I thought, okay, this guy gets me, you know, maybe I'll check this out. And I would take it home and listen to it. And I'd say, wow, this is exactly where I'm going as a musician. You know, once I heard Ambient 1, 2, 3, and 4, which are very actually different from each other, I went back in time a little bit. He did an album called Discrete Music, which is really kind of the beginning of modern ambient music. Discrete music was done basically music is that you don't have to necessarily pay attention to. It's in the background to influence your mood. And I, you know, later on, I thought that's kind of cool. Music can do that. Mm-hmm. We've all been in places where music has just probably upset us, you know, whether it's too loud or too frenetic. And there's also places where we've been where music was really calming, and so calming that we didn't even notice that it was there, but our mood was generally improved. And I thought, how powerful is that? That's pretty amazing that music can do that. Mm-hmm. And also, when you're not tied down to popular song structures, you know, verses and choruses and things that people are going to sing, you know, it's pretty freeing, you know, and it's you can get away from a 3-minute pop song. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I certainly grew up with 3-minute pop songs, and I'm sure a lot of people who listen to this have, and they have their favorite artists too. And you know, I wanted to add that with the idea of learning to play guitar. You know, I was listening to great jazz guitar players and great rock and blues guitar players. And I thought, like, you know, I love the rebellion in rock music. How come I don't hear that in a lot of other music forms? I hear it in jazz, certainly, mm-hmm. you know, and it's certainly the early blues pioneers were doing that. But I think, you know, over time, music kind of evolved into what's going to sell.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. and what people are going to, if people buy one thing, then there's going to be a bunch of people, you know, other musicians who chase that and try to play the same kind of a thing because they're hoping for the same success. Mm-hmm. And I jumped the other direction.
Yeah. I think that's a good instinct to have. I think that's what, to me, that's what makes music and art, you know, is pushing those boundaries. So I love that there are musicians do that. And, you know, ultimately, this stuff influences so much. I mean, you know, ambient music today, if you listen, you know, if you listen to even pop music, you can sometimes hear that how, you know, ambient music is a lot about like texture, right? And getting different layers in there. And I sometimes hear that in some of the popular songs too. Like they're kind of incorporating some of that as well. One of my favorite little trivia, I don't know if you know this, one of my favorite little trivias about Brian Eno is that he composed the old Windows startup sound from the 90s.
He did.
And I think that's such a cool little fact. And if those of you listening, if you haven't had the chance to listen to it, go back and listen to the Windows startup sound from the 90s. And if you listen to it slowed down...
Really?
It is a beautiful piece of music.
I would believe that.
And I think, and I could be wrong, but I think I read somewhere that he wrote a piece and then he had to fit it within a certain amount of time. And then
I think
that's what he did.
Maybe 1.5 seconds? I mean, it's really quick.
It's very quick.
It's very quick. Yeah. Well, you know, the interesting thing about that is that I want to say it's either the Windows 8 or Windows 10 startup sound, one of those. Robert Fripp did it.
Oh.
Yeah. So apparently one of his guitar students worked for Microsoft and asked him to come in, and he brought his entire guitar rig, and Robert Fripp is known for playing guitar that does not sound like a guitar at all, and came up with four notes, which was the beginning Windows startup sound for whichever version that was.
I'll have to listen to it.
Yeah, it's four notes. And there's actually video of him recording it online, and they're talking through, no, I want this to ascend. Oh, maybe go up a little higher on that last note. And it's really... It's interesting to see the creative, you know, idea behind that.
Well, I love that they hired actual... Like
real musicians.
Real musicians and composers to make these
now,
sounds.
What would have happened today? They would have just asked AI to do
not,
it.
Yeah. Let's not get into that. No, but you end up with something really beautiful when you ask a human to come up with, use your imagination.
Imagine, yeah, that's crazy.
Well, let's talk about another fun fact about you.
Sure.
One of your previous projects that I'm excited to talk about is you wrote and recorded the music for a audio tour of the Dalí Museum. Is that right?
It is, yeah.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, you did. It was, you know, I was the exhibit was called Dalí and Da Vinci, and it was basically parallels between Da Vinci's art and his life and Dalí's life and his art. And it was a fascinating exhibit. It was really wonderful. And, you know, I think when they asked me, I hadn't seen the exhibit. It wasn't public yet. I think it was months before they were even going to set it up. I just got the name of it. And I'm like, okay, so I get the basic idea.
Right.
So there's, you know, some sort of Spanish stuff, some sort of Italian stuff. You have Renaissance versus more, you know, 20th century. And I thought, like, what can I do with that? And what would I want to listen to if I was walking through a tour? Do I want music that's going to separate me from the art? Probably not. Mm. I want something that is going to blend in with and hopefully enhance your experience when you pay your money and go through the door of a museum and listen to somebody narrating. Now, this was going to be something that somebody was talking over top of. Mm. So that was part of it as well. So I didn't want something that was too frenetic, and I didn't want something that was so serene that you're going to fall asleep while you're listening to somebody explain the details of a painting over top of it. So I wanted, yeah, you need some things that are instrumental. So as people are walking from exhibit to exhibit, they have something to listen mm-hmm. to. So as a musician and as a composer, it was a really fun creative challenge. And I love doing those types of things, especially if I had never done anything like that before, which of course, who's going to actually do that? You know, unless that's your job, you haven't done that before as a musician.
Right.
And those types of challenges that I was listening to and that problem solving was as important to me as the notes that I physically played. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, the technical aspects of recording or the technical aspects of the gear that you're going to choose or the timbre of the sounds that you're going to use are as important as the notes that you play. And I love all of that. I'm kind, you know, I've met so many musicians and so many great musicians who just show up with their instrument in their hand and they play and they don't think too much about it. They just have that connection. I kind of didn't. I really had to work very, very, very hard to do what I could do. And so I thought about every aspect about how I physically make a sound. How can I hook things up to make sounds that you haven't heard before, mm-hmm. you know, and are going to be brand new to you? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that the first time I dove into doing a project like that. And I've done, you know, some other types of things, but nothing quite at that scale before. Mm. Yeah.
How did the Dalí Museum respond to the pieces that you sent over?
They seemed to really like it.
Yeah.
They were pretty pleased with it, and it was really fun weeks later, or whenever it was probably months later, when it actually opened. And I went in without even letting them know, and just as a paying patron, you mm-hmm. know, and listened to it as I walked through, you know, and saw other people listening to it with headphones on while they were like walking through the museum. I thought that was a cool thing.
Oh, that must have been wild.
You know, but sure. That also got me into performing at other types of museums, just as a live musician. I had performed at Tampa Museum of Art and the Florida Aquarium, things like that, where I started thinking about other places musicians can play, or other places that could feature live musicians that you wouldn't normally actually see them. Mm. And that was really interesting to me, because as a guitar player, and it's very different, I know your keyboard player might be a little bit different, but as a guitar player, you're caught from a young age that, well, you put a band together and you might get good enough to play some bars and maybe some festivals and things like that. And that seemed to be the only options for, as guitar players were taught, and all media basically said that for a guitar player. The goal was to be up in front of the thousands of people and screaming your name. And I think that's fantastic. However, I also figured that there could be other cool places mm-hmm. that could feature live music. Where you wouldn't see it. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of it, I think that a lot of the challenge is the connections, right?
Like, right.
I think there has been a lack of space for composers specifically, but also instrumentalists in general,
sure.
to connect with the people that might be interested in hiring them. And that's why I'm hoping that this program, like what we're doing here at Radio St. Pete and what I'm doing with Soundscapes, I'm hoping to create space for this community. And I'm hoping that when the next time, who knows, the Tampa Museum of Art or the St. Petersburg Fine Arts Museum wants music, that they would turn to us and be like, oh, well, you know, there was a really good interview with David who did music for the Dali. Maybe he would be a good fit for this project. You know, I think that's what we need here in St. Pete, because we've done such a great job at showcasing all of the visual arts. But I don't think there has been a really good, successful effort in getting the performing arts, you know.
Yeah, and I think for me, you know, one of the cool things about your show was that I realized I'm not alone. There's other people out there, actually within my own area, within the Tampa Bay area, who kind of do this.
Yeah,
and I don't feel so alone.
Yeah, there's a lot of talented folks in
there
the area.
There are. It's amazing to me. You know, the thing is that it's, you know, more than ever, I think musicians can be very isolated, especially if they're creating music at home and they're just putting it out online and stuff. And it's you know, it's harder to go and meet other people, especially if you're doing a music type that is not as common or is not as popular. There's not a lot of outlets. And just because you're a composer doesn't mean you're a performer. You know, and you could be a composer just putting music out, whether you're just recording it and putting it out online. But that's different than collaborating or getting together with other musicians or going out in the public and putting music in a place that you normally wouldn't see it. And I think that I would love to have more musicians go out and do that and believe that they could do that.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the idea of going to the Dali Museum and put on my headphones and knowing that's a local
or just stumbling upon somebody around the corner who's performing and like, wow, I didn't realize this was here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit for a while and look at these paintings or look at these fish swim by and listen to some cool live music.
And I have to say, I have been really enjoying, there have been a few artists that do busking downtown. And I think that's also like so cool. And I hope that we encourage that kind of performance, because I think it just, like you said, it's just great to just walk up and be like, oh wow, this is fantastic.
Sure.
I want to hear more.
Absolutely. And I know the city of Tampa used to do this. I'm not sure if there's, because I used to perform for them all the time. They would hire me to go to their park and just set up and play.
Oh, that's great.
You know,
I love that.
I would love for St. Pete to do something like that. Like literally sponsor some of the artists that live here.
Hey, well, you said it right here on the air. So we've put it out into the universe. So maybe there's a council member listening that has some use for some funds that they need to figure out where to put. So
that's right.
Here's hoping for that. I have a question that I want to ask.
Sure.
As we near the end of this segment, and that question is a question I ask everybody that's on my show, and that is, what music inspires you?
That is a great question. I think the music that inspires me is music that I can tell the intention behind it. Mm-hmm. And that is a very abstract kind of definition of that. But to me, it's very, very clear. I like musicians that have a very clear aim and they're able to execute it. In other words, I could hear what they're going for right in their music and the notes that they play. Some of the guitar players that I you know, well, let's say a guitar player that I really, really love is a guy named Robert Fripp. We talked about him earlier. He worked with Brian Eno and was longtime guitar player for the band King Crimson. But a very odd player. He had a very strange vocabulary at a time in England when everybody was listening to American blues music. He decided he wasn't going to do that, so his vocabulary was completely different. He developed his entire different technique of playing guitar and eventually put out several ambient music albums of stuff that doesn't even sound like guitar, although it was triggered by guitar playing. And the first time I had heard that, I was transfixed, and I thought, like, wait a second, I'm not alone. There's other people that think about this instrument a little bit differently. And while I don't do the exact same thing that he does, I am very influenced by the creative approach that pretty much any musician has to their instrument. You know, if you have a cello and you're playing it and doing something differently than any other cellist that I've ever heard, I'm going to be the first one in line buying a ticket to your show. And I love that. I still think it's important to learn how to play your instrument. Certainly, we got to learn the vocabulary and understand what has come before us. But otherwise, it's just somebody banging pots and pans together. And that to me, the intention does not come through when I just hear that. Yeah. I want to hear somebody who chooses to create something that might be abstract or ambient. Because not just because it's the only thing that they can do, it's because they choose to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That's an interesting take. I see what you're saying, though. Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, this has been fantastic. And this is just an amazing service for the musicians in Tampa Bay.
Oh, well, I'm glad you feel that way. I hope that it's a service to everyone, really. I mean, like I said, I want to create space.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, so hopefully this will, hopefully this is a start of something big. You know?
I would love that.
You know, well, you're going to be co-hosting my next Soundscapes radio show.
Wonderful.
This upcoming Monday. So if you're listening, be sure to tune in Monday night at 10 p.m. Dave and I will be co-hosting my typical Soundscapes show. We'll be playing instrumental music. We'll be playing some of David's music. We'll be playing some of the music that we've talked about today.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a great time. So be sure to tune in to either 96.7 FM if you're local, or RadioSt.Pete.com if you're not in St. Pete.
There's an app too, right?
There is an app.
Yes.
You can now download the Radio St. Pete app. It just launched both on iOS and Android. So be sure to check that out as well. Thank you for the plug. I forgot to mention that. Karen would be so proud of you for bringing it up. So be sure to tune in. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of the week.